Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we get to take a little trip down memory lane and talk about how we used to do remote broadcasts, but we come through the decades and right up to today and how big stations, even little ones too, are doing remote live broadcasts these days, what technologies work and what techniques work. Charles Kinney is our guest. He's coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at Nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb right there at the top of the tower. And on today's show, the dude that gave me that light bulb from the top of the tower is our guest. Today's show is called something like the world's tallest remote boy with, and I hate calling him boy, that just doesn't seem right, but he calls himself that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Kirk. I'm in the Telus Alliance studio, Nashville, Tennessee. You know me. Chris Tarr says he's going to try to make it, but I don't know. He's on the road right now, may or may not make it to a studio, but the man who did make it to a studio is here. That's Charles Kinney. Charles, good to see you. Welcome in.
Hey there. Thank you so much for having me on. Got a little bit of a video connection challenge, but kind of goes along with our theme of the joys of doing remotes.
You are out somewhere, but you are at a studio, right?
I am in Athens, but compared to my usual office in Atlanta, Athens is a little more remote and a little less equipped. So,
hey, Charles, you being from Georgia, I'm sure you've been out in the sticks. You've been out at transmitter sites that are way out. I heard a man tell something really funny a couple weeks ago. In fact, Ray Stevens told this joke. Ray Stevens, the streak, that guy.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
Yeah. Because he grew up in Georgia, just like you.
Oh yeah.
And but down in South Georgia, and he said we lived so far out that you had to go towards town to go hunting. That was pretty.
I have a few tower sites like that.
I bet you got to go towards town to go hunting. All right. So Charles Kinney is here with us, and Charles, tell me a little bit about what you do. You've got a pretty interesting and I think desirable job in the industry. I know day to day when you're fighting the battles, I mean, it always seemed that way, but tell me what you do in Atlanta.
No, I've had a really fantastic career. I've been the director of engineering for the Cox radio stations in Atlanta and Athens now for 23 years. Probably the biggest set of call letters would be WSB, AM, and FM. And to be associated with a station that just turned 100 years old has really, really been just amazing. And it's been a great ride. So I've learned a lot. I've gotten to participate in a lot of great projects over the years. And I'm really proud to be here.
Well, and you're going to the topic of the show is about remotes. And of course, what was an easy decision was to say, hey, Charles posts in social media every week, sometimes a couple times a week, about setting up a remote broadcast. Typically, when you post these things on Facebook, are you typically doing a remote for WSB or one of your other stations at Cox Media Group?
Usually, I only do the remotes for WSB specifically because they're so complicated, or morning show remotes. Or we have some stuff with the Georgia Radio Network that I have to do, which involves me coming to Athens and doing stuff. It's not that I'm such a fan of doing remotes. It's unfortunately kind of a sign of the times these days. You have less staff, less budget, and I don't get paid overtime. So,
oh no!
So well, here I am.
They've got you setting them up, and at least they know one thing for sure: they're going to get set up right. If if it can be done, it'll get done. And what we're going to talk, one thing we're going to talk about today is some of the remote broadcasting techniques that people use these days, as opposed to when I was young and handsome and on the radio, we always, almost always used the MARTI transmitter. So we're going to talk about remote technologies and techniques coming up on today's show. Charles, I got to take a break real quick. We're going to talk about our friends at Nautel. Nautel, as they've been doing so often throughout the pandemic. And now that, yes, I know Joe Biden said, President Biden says it's over, the pandemic's over. And yeah, there's still people sick here and there, but there's always going to be that. But as a pandemic kind of over with, I was in a doctor's office literally yesterday, and they said you don't have to wear a mask anymore at their doctor's office. So that was, I guess, encouraging for most folks. And you, of course, you still could if you wanted to. But back to Nautel, they're doing their Transmission Talk Tuesdays, and coming up indeed, on this coming Tuesday, I believe it's the 27th, Jeff Welton is going to be welcoming Nautel's very own Charles Drillin to the Transmission Talk Tuesday. Charlie is the longtime plant manager of Nautel in Maine, in the U.S., in the state of Maine. He's responsible for overseeing the production of many of the Nautel transmitters installed around the world today. Charlie's going to provide a little history of Nautel Maine and provide some insight into the overall capabilities of their Bangor, Maine plant and the wonderful, awesome work that comes out of that location. They're going to meet some of the folks on the front lines that you may have heard of or heard on the phone, but never get a chance to see. Don't miss this very special and valuable episode. It is coming up on Tuesday, the 27th of September. You can go register right now. Go to nautel.com/webinars and then click on the Transmission Talk Tuesday icon and words, and you can be taken right there. You can just type your name and email address in, and they will remind you that the webinar is coming up. And I keep saying webinars, you know, it's a Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtable discussion. And that means that you, if you want to, you get to participate, you can ask questions and get the answers right there. So, you know, Nautel is an international company. They started out in Canada and in Nova Scotia, and then they have the plant in Bangor, Maine as well. So I'm curious to find out, you know, how they divide the work among two different places. So find that out at nautel.com/webinars. Thanks, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, we're going to jump into it here with Charles Kinney and talk about remotes. Charles, what were remotes like when you started out in the business many, many years ago? And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Charles, was your father involved as an engineer in radio as well?
He definitely was. While all the other little kids were changing the oil in the car with their dads, my dad would say, "Come on, son, we're going to change the tube in the transmitter," which we did. yeah, there's pictures of me. I should have tried to dig some of those up, schlepping MARTI transmitters and putting bolting on the antenna to the mast that was on the van, because back in the 70s, we couldn't afford pneumatic mast in Panama City. So I've had a lot of experience with MARTI. And it's really a shame that that product kind of never developed to its full potential in a digital world. It was really great, but the band's all trash now. And without digital, it's just, especially in larger markets and even in smaller places, it's getting worse and worse. It's just virtually impossible to use successfully.
Oh, really? I hadn't used a MARTI in so long. And, you know, I guess there were two major bands that were used, you know, frequency bands that were used. You had your VHF band. What was that typically in the, 160 megahertz? Okay. And then you had your 450 megahertz range that was also available for use.
Yep. And we actually still use some MARTI transmitters. For the only MARTI transmitters we have are in the traffic helicopter.
Oh, now, and why is that a benefit for you?
Compared to a two-way radio, the MARTI, of course, has 15 kilohertz bandwidth.
Oh, and so it seems like I recall that there were some MARTI channels, some RF channels available that were wider, that you could have more audio bandwidth. And then there are others that were narrower that you were supposed to have less audio bandwidth. And I don't know that everybody played by the proper rules there, but there may have been a time that we did play by the proper rules.
Without a doubt, back in the day. Now, I mean, we're probably the only people left using anything related to Marty. And like I say, if it wasn't for the fact it was in the helicopter, we wouldn't be doing it either.
You know, I was just thinking in television, when they do TV signals coming from a helicopter, they're typically using some kind of a steerable or sectorized receiving antenna. And I believe you've got one of those at the TV station because I've flown a drone near it. It's probably a sectorized antenna, or maybe it's got an interior steerable element. But for Marty, if you're in a helicopter, what kind of receiving antenna are you using? An Omni or something steerable?
No, it's Omni. The cost would be very prohibitive to try and have something that would track with the helicopter. And it's an Omni antenna on the helicopter as well. So it works out. We've got three different receive sites, and we've got a voter that determines which one is going to sound the best because the Atlanta Metro has gotten ridiculously huge.
I was just going to ask you about that. I never got to use one of these voting systems where you might have several. You said you had three receive sites around Atlanta. How does a voting system function? How does it work?
So literally we're using phone lines. We actually need to upgrade that to IP, but right now it's just a data circuit, RS-45, and it looks at the signal level and the signal noise ratio on each receiver. And then it has a vote, and whoever's the best gets routed through.
So does that audio selection occur at the station then based on who's giving the best receive?
Correct.
Signal? Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So the voting goes on at the point where the audio signals come together, but you also have a data line to bring back what is the RF receive level.
Correct. It doesn't, the voter doesn't know anything about audio. It's just talking to the receivers directly.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay. I never got to use one of those, but we did have, I had one station that, and you can appreciate this, a lot of towns started out with an AM station, and then along came maybe the 8090 docket, or maybe they had an FM station prior to that. And they got an FM station and they put that up on a hill somewhere, you know, on the outskirts of town. And they thought, oh, let's put our Marty receiving antenna there at the FM site. Great. So up way high. It's nice. I was in Mount Sterling, Kentucky at WMST was the call letters. And that's where we had our Marty receive site, but we had to get the audio back from the receive site back to the studio. Now we could have bought another Marty system and backhauled the audio. We could have paid for another phone line to bring the audio back. But since we already had a stereo pair of phone lines going there with center tapped transformers on them, we did that thing where you make a phantom line out of the center taps of the left side and the right side, and then you could send audio back over supposedly with no crosstalk. But I gotta tell you, there was a little bit of crosstalk because the windings on the transformers aren't perfect. I'm sure one side may have had a little more resistance or inductance or reluctance or whatever react than the other side. So there was a little bit of leakage from the Marty receiver into the FM. I mean, it may have been 50, 60 dB down, but you know, if you had dead air on the FM, you could hear something going on. So anyway, point is, what a memory that brings back, thinking about bringing back the Marty on a phantom, you know, line that you've created from the center tap of two other lines. It took another pair of transformers. Did you do anything interesting, fun, strange to bring audio back from a receive site?
We actually had several locations as I was in my much younger days. We'd bring it back on an SCA. If you had a good, you couldn't do it in the world of where you're trying to jam in RDS and all this other stuff. But if you had a good clean signal on 67 kilohertz, you could definitely bring back voice with the Marty, and it was pretty solid.
Oh, wait, so you'd
multiple places.
So you'd receive the Marty audio at the transmitter site, and at the transmitter site, you had a subcarrier generator, like a 67 or a 92 kilohertz subcarrier generator. You take the Marty audio, put it into that subcarrier generator, and now you're technically transmitting that audio all over your coverage area, but nobody can hear it unless they have an SCA receiver, right?
Right. And so then did you ever use an SCA receiver at the studio?
Yeah. Okay. Wow. You know, I did do that somewhere. I can't remember where. Later on, it seems like at one point, Marty, or maybe it was Mosley, somebody was offering companding in that setup to where it would lower your noise floor effectively because it acted kind of like, you know, Dolby noise reduction. Did you ever have that?
So at WGLF in Tallahassee, we tried out the companding and it was better, but it wasn't worth the cost. And so it just kind of went away.
Wow. Well, and tell you what, we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna have a couple more memories about how we used to do remotes and maybe still do in some cases. I'd love to know about stations, you know, still using their Marty system to bring back high school football and basketball games or remotes from the car dealer. We'll find out about that. And of course, we'll move into the more modern world. Luckily I was able to talk to Chris Tarr last night by text. And got a couple questions for Charles Kinney from Chris Tarr. So we're going to present those to Charles as well. And Charles, throughout the rest of our show, we'll have some tips, tricks, advice, tell you what he does, how to get remotes going that sound good from just about anywhere. This Week in Radio Tech, number 611, with Charles Kinney as our guest, the world's tallest remote boy. We'll be right back after this great word from Broadcast Bionics.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere and Skype TX for Radio brings high quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
And hey, that all works great on remote too. That's right. Your talent can be on remote, like Charles and I are talking about, and still have access to all the social media interactions that the Bionic Studio provides you. Talk show, social, director, and contest, plenty from bionics.co.uk. Check them out if you would. They're a great sponsor and really clever people. We're going to have Dan McQuillan back sometime, I hope before the end of the year, to talk about some amazing virtualized technologies that they showed at NAB and they showed again at IBC. So they are on top of things. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack here in the Nashville studio, the Telos Alliance studio this week in Radio Tech. Charles Kinney is with us. Charles, what town were you off in today? I forgot. Augusta?
Beautiful, scenic Athens, Georgia, home of the Bulldogs.
Oh, Athens, I'm sorry. Yes, okay, all right. And now Athens, is that near the tower that I met you at in Lula? Or is that somewhere else?
It's, as the crow flies, it's about 45 miles. But those stations on that tower technically would be considered the Athens cluster. So Athens, Gainesville.
Oh, really? So do you have STL shots or data pipes that go that far from Lula back to the studio in Athens?
We do. We've got it's one heck of a hop, and we use the Harris HD links, which I got to tell you are a really fantastic microwave link. I mean, it's the I Ching of microwave radio. So
I only got a chance once to deal with the Harris CD link, and seems I recall it is the output power from the transmitter like something like 1 watt. Is that what it is?
So the CD link actually would do 2 watts, and it's really great. But the HD link will do dual stereo linear channels at 5 watts, up to 5 watts. Okay. You can, you know, depends on your path and all. But yeah, we're running it wide open. So,
all right. So back to. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was just saying it's been really good, but we still have microwave fade, so we've been dealing with some remote equipment to help handle that with satellite internet and Comrex to have a backup path. So everything old is new again.
Okay. So back to remote technologies, we've been talking about MARTI, and of course, for the few folks who like weren't around or don't know what that is, MARTI, MARTI, was a company that made this RF gear that would work at frequencies that were allocated to broadcasters to get audio from one place to another. And some of their products had a little mixer, like a mic mixer on it, so you could take that to a football game, baseball game, and mix different mics together. Some people, for example, I've been out to maybe a church where the church would do a broadcast every Sunday, and rather than transport the transmitter to and from the church on Sunday morning, they would just leave a transmitter there, or the church would buy one, or the radio station would buy one and rent it to the church, or it'd be part of the service. So that could just stay there. I've certainly, Charles, have you been to locations where maybe getting an antenna up and out to transmit back to the studio was a bit challenging, so the antenna got permanently mounted at the venue and just stayed there? Do you ever have that?
Oh, I've done that over and over. Back in the earlier days of my career, it wasn't uncommon at all. You mentioned churches. That actually was a pretty common thing back in the day. But when I was growing up in Panama City, we would do broadcasts from clubs on Panama City Beach, and we would have fixed MARTI antennas that just stayed there. And in some cases, the MARTI transmitter was there all the time. In other cases, you just have a piece of coax and power, so you bring the transmitter and just plug it in and turn it on, you're ready to go. It was great because you never had to worry about aiming the antenna. And in smaller markets back in those days, it's amazing how we forget that the DJs actually would handle that technology. There was no engineer going out and setting up the remote. I mean, you know, the afternoon guy was doing the remote, then the afternoon guy was plugging in the MARTI, plugging in the mic, driving the van. I mean, you know, it was all in.
Hey, and general, these days,
talent fee was a beer tab. You know?
these days, we all have cell phones, right? So if we had to check the signal strength of the MARTI, is it working? You know, then great, you could call now and ask. But back in those days, I remember we had a one-way communication channel, except we also had the radio, so you could listen to the station on a car radio or a portable radio. And remember when we would, what would we say to the announcer at the studio?
Tap on the mic.
Yes, or where I grew up in Kentucky, it was always dip the audio if you can hear me.
Music,
and so on the air, they would turn the audio of the station down.
Yep, that was another common one, which drove program directors insane.
Sure. One more thing to cover before we get into today's technology. I never had to deal with this, but I'm guessing you probably did. And that is when you had a profanity delay on the main stage, on the station's main audio, how do you do a remote with, you know, live talk back, live interaction with the station when all the station's audio is delayed by, you know, 7 seconds for a profanity delay? Did you ever deal with that?
I only dealt with that once, and the solution was the opposite of what we were talking about with the MARTI receiver. So literally, we have a radio for the jock that would pick up the SCA, and we would send a program feed across the SCA, and the jock would listen to that to
which would be real time
pre-delay audio, right?
Yeah, pre-delay.
So in Atlanta, we actually have that situation with the traffic folks, because WSB, being a news talk station, runs in delay a huge majority of the time. And so we have what's called a back cue radio. And in the helicopter, they've got a receiver that can hear that. And that's raw program audio. So they don't have to worry about the 8-second delay. And we don't have to worry about the board ops trying to constantly ramp in and out, so that every time there's news and traffic, they have no delay.
Wow. Wow. I take it that, and you have more than one FM station in the Atlanta market that you take care of, I take it?
I take care of, from a full power signal standpoint, let's see, 8 FMs and 3 AMs.
Wow. Okay. What I was going to dig at here is, if your FM is also running HD, correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't that cuts out any possibility of an analog subcarrier at like 67 kilohertz? How would you possibly get backhaul, pre-delay backhaul audio if your station is running HD channels?
So to be fair, when we first went HD back in 2003, we were on clearly the bleeding edge, and we did use a 92 kilohertz subcarrier to backhaul pre-delay audio. It was kind of an exercise in futility, and we've come a long way since then. But yes, it was a huge challenge, huge challenge.
I have heard of stations. A friend of mine used to engineer in Chicago, and he said they basically used a MARTI channel in reverse. In other words, they transmitted from the studio, and that was their pre-delay audio, and you'd have a dedicated receiver, whatever it was, 161 or 450 megahertz, to hear the pre-delay audio. They were transmitting that over a MARTI, a second MARTI.
And that's exactly what we do with the traffic. So helicopter.
Oh,
and we actually have traffic people out in the field as well. That's the same exact thing.
Gotcha. Well, let's crank forward here. It seems like you alluded earlier in our conversation here to, hey, MARTI should have kind of kept up and gone digital. And it seems like, am I wrong? Was there a short-lived digital, not MARTI brand, maybe, it may have been, I want to say, I don't know what brand it was. Maybe Bernie Wise at Energionics actually brought this out. I seem to recall him having some kind of a digital compressed, like MP3'd, remote pickup system. Do you remember that?
It does seem like somebody talked about having that. And I think it was kind of a bolt-on thing for an actual MARTI.
Oh,
but I never saw one that worked.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like Leonard Kahn. You know, he had great ideas, but I never saw one that worked.
There you go. All right. So we moved into the dial-up era. And by the way, we've skipped the whole telephone thing. I realize that. A lot of folks did remotes by telephone. They'd unscrew the receiver. They'd take the output of a Shure mixer, alligator clip it to the clip leads in the telephone handset, and go that way. I get that. Is there anything unusual you want to mention about that? And then back in the studio, of course, they would just use their telephone hybrid or a QKT coupler to get the audio off the phone line and into the audio console.
Well, I mean, the single line stuff probably has been beaten to death by everybody in the world, but there actually was some pretty good technology by Comrex, and Gentner had it as well, with the frequency extenders that would particularly do multi-line. And Comrex was really cool with the three-line frequency extender. I mean, I remember doing the first remote I ever did at Disney back in, I don't know, 1990. And we had those, and the audio quality was amazingly good.
Yeah. The first thing that I remember was the single line extender, where, remember, audio over a phone line, a fully filtered phone line, you're missing the bass. About 300 hertz and down, you're missing. And that takes away a lot of the naturalness of audio when you filter it like that. So Comrex would actually take your audio and shift your audio up so that your bass notes, 100 hertz, 150 hertz, 200 hertz, those would get shifted up, would pass through the phone system. Yes, you'd lose some off the top end, but it was a fraction of an octave, whereas the bottom end, it might be an octave or more. Shove that through at the other end, you'd shift the audio back down, and you'd end up with audio that had nice bass over the phone line. Now, yes, you'd cut off the high end a little bit in doing that, but again, octave-wise, which is how we perceive this, wasn't that big a deal. And that was a purely analog system. And then they had the two-line system, which would take the audio from your mixer, divide it into two sets. One of them shift up a little bit. The other one shift down a lot to fit that through two different phone lines. At the other end, do the opposite, and you'd end up with close to 5 kilohertz of audio, and that sounded kind of nice. And now you just mentioned the three-line. I saw one from Gentner. Did I ever tell you the story about getting the demo at the NAB show in Atlanta, that year that the NAB was in Atlanta?
No.
Oh, well, you remember a guy named Dave Pedersen worked for Gentner, and he was showing the three-line Gentner frequency extender, showing that off to a couple of farm broadcasters from Iowa. And, you know, one of them was wearing coveralls, and the other one was wearing overhauls. And if you know the difference, then you're probably a farm broadcaster, too. And so Dave Pedersen gave the demo, and these two guys, man, their eyes were lining up. I know they were thinking, hey, we can do the hog belly reports, you know, and have it sound good. And Dave walked off, and these two guys turned to each other. And I've used this story a million times. One of them says to the other, he says, you know, this here digital's the coming thing. that had to be back in, I don't know, 92, when I saw, whatever year that the NAB went to Atlanta. Remember what year that was? Maybe 93?
That may have been 90.
90 could have been.
A long time ago.
My former employee Robert Benjamin was with me on that trip, and we stayed at some seedy motel in a very poorly chosen location in Atlanta. But Marta was right there, so we could easily get downtown, you know, to them.
Well, Marta is generally near poorly chosen locations in Atlanta.
we were taking our lives in our hands. We could have bought anything we wanted to out in the parking lot of that hotel. I'm telling you right now, it was for sale right out there at the Motel 6. It was something else. Okay. Now, so let's crank it into fast forward into to. Oh, well, then we had POTS dial-up digital remote systems. Certainly Comrex had one, actually Telos Alliance had one. But what was your experience with those things that you'd hook to an ordinary POTS line, but modems would squawk at each other and get some data through there? What was that like?
So there were a lot of versions of that, mostly with Comrex. They seemed to really, really have put the effort in to get it down. But the Comrex hotline was good, and it was an amazing first step. Then they came out with the Vector, and by the time they got to the Matrix, which was the final POTS codec for Comrex, they really had it down. And the Comrex Matrix, which we actually still use a couple of in Atlanta at WSB, ones for our Capital Bureau, where we have problems getting internet, and there's one somewhere else that I can't remember off the top of my head, but they are still rock solid and just work fantastic if you can get a good solid POTS line.
And I think that's it. I recall at my small stations in Mississippi, we bought a set for the sports department, and at some stadiums they worked fine and others they didn't. The ones that they didn't work fine, we tended to find out, well, those are places where the POTS line provided by the college or the university was simply an extension off of their PBX. And those tended to not work as well. But if it was a real right POTS line from the telco, that would work okay. Do you know why that was?
Because it would squash the bandwidth. So theoretically, from the telco, you're supposed to get 3 kilohertz, and you would get at least 3 kilohertz. The telco, if you had a real analog POTS line, it would generally exceed that, and so you could get the right amount of bandwidth to make the codecs work, because they were just essentially sending. It was a modem. I mean, that was all it was.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I think at the end, the matrix was 28.8. I don't think they, maybe they got to 56K, but anyway, it was just a modem. And
yeah,
if you were coming off the PBX, especially once people started bringing in PRIs, the channels were so limited, you couldn't push enough bandwidth across that to get out to the Bell System's network. Once you got to their network, no problem. But
yeah,
to get to the network, it would narrowband it and it wouldn't work.
And I think another factor there may have been if you could, if the only, well, besides the modem that you were using within the Comrex vector or hotline or whatever, if the only codec in the system was the Bell System's G.711 codec, which is a reasonably clean affair considering what's going on, and it would get you to 64, well, it would use 64 kilobits. If that was the only one involved, then you were safe. But if somewhere along the line somebody was throwing in G.729 or other things that would just, you know, squash you down to a stupid low bit rate, then, you know, like to fit 2 phone calls in a single slot on a T1, then you had problems. But okay. I'm glad that era passed us by pretty quickly. Interesting that you're still using some there in Atlanta for a news bureau, but if you got some nailed up stuff, you know, that doesn't change, I guess you're okay. But take one out on the road and yeah, you had problems then a lot of times, and yeah, bad. So we'll fast forward or come to the natural progression, which is using the public internet as your transmission medium. And of course, when manufacturers brought these remote boxes out that would connect to the public internet, everything's at the cutting edge of technology. And it seems like we had enough places where the internet was sometimes not good enough or not reliable enough, or you had too much packet loss for these to work well. What were your early experiences in using these internet connected codecs?
So generically, we had kind of negative experiences when we first started using that, nothing to do with the equipment, because we'd gotten so used to ISDN, which we kind of skipped over. I mean, ISDN and frankly Telos, I mean, let's face it, by the end when you had the Zephyr Extreme, I mean, that was the I Ching of ISDN, and I wish I could still get ISDN to this day and use my codecs, but of course the phone company in the world have moved on. But the catch was, we needed something that was as good as ISDN that could work with the internet. And the early Comrex stuff for the access, the equipment was there, but the network wasn't. And it was a real challenge in the interim when ISDN was dying and the internet, the IP stuff wasn't quite there.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up ISDN. Shame on me for forgetting that. That's one thing that made Telos famous, was, you know, a guy like Steve Church, the first to put MP3 into an ISDN codec, and then the first to integrate the NT1 adapter into the Zephyr itself. So tell you what, when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to touch on that ISDN thing and talk about why it was good, and then why the phone company got away from it, and now we're in the internet era, which finally, I think, has reached the point where it's typically, not always, but typically better than ISDN, and I'll tell you why I think so. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, Charles Kinney is our guest, the world's tallest remote boy, and I'm Kirk Harnack, and I got right in front of me here, I got something called the Henry Superlight. Let me hold it in front of the camera for you. The Henry Superlight LED Tally Light Controller. Now, if you've built some studios, and I'll bet Charles has, you've used the Henry Super Relay. And we've been using those for years to integrate you know, the small contacts on our audio console for turning on a tally light. When you turn the mic on, you want to do a couple things. You want the speakers to mute, and broadcast consoles do that naturally, typically. But a console like a little Mackie console or a Behringer won't do that for you. But they'll also give you a contact closure to go light up a tally light. And typically those lights, you know, were 110 volt lights. And the Super Relay easily lets you do that safely too. It even had a plug-in, a regular outlet for the tally light, so you didn't have to, have bare wires or anything like that. Well, the Super Light is for the new era of tally lights, whether it's a light over the door to warn people not to come in or next to the door, or lights that are on the mic stands like they have so many of these days. Well, the Henry Super Light can help you get that done in a really meaningful way. It still can give you that flashing light if you want. There's a jumper setting inside, lets you set it for flashing. There is the two different Phoenix connectors on here. One of them is for the control of this thing to turn it on or off. And you've got some options there. If your logic is normally high or normally low, whatever, you can adjust it to accommodate the logic that your audio console is giving you. And then you've got the relay outputs over on the right-hand side there, the normally closed, the normally open, and the center of that relay. And what that lets you do things like, let's say you run your speakers through here. Let's say you have a console that doesn't mute your speakers for you. Well, just run it through the normally closed contact, and that way, when this thing is de-energized, your speakers work. But when you turn the mic on and you energize the Henry Super Light, well, it opens that relay, opens that connection. It's no longer closed, and your speakers will mute. How about that? The other cool thing is this Control Link I/O. Look on the screen there in the lower right-hand corner. You'll see several super lights connected together in a daisy chain fashion. And the reason for that is, let's say that you put your super lights all in the central wiring area, or your rack room, as I call it. You can address each one individually. There's little jumpers inside that let you set the address 1, 2, 3, or 4 for each of these. And then you can send a Cat 5 cable between them, and then also send a Cat 5 cable over to, let's say you have one of those GPIO devices, from Axia, or from Wheatstone, or Lavo. You can get your contact closures for your different stations there. The point is, it makes the wiring easy to do. This thing comes with a 12-volt wall transformer. If you need to power more lights, you can provide a little bit of up to 2 amps externally to light your, if you have more lights to light than the little power supply will run. And there you go. Henry makes not only the Super Light, but they make other boxes as well that will really help you get your studios built and built quickly. Henry makes this really cool box that is made for integrating a UPS, an uninterruptible power supply, into your equipment rack. I mean, what do you do if you got to take the UPS offline and even unplug it? Oh man, that can be a pain. Well, the little box that Henry makes for that will let you, if it loses the UPS power, it'll run your rack off of the commercial power and bypass the UPS altogether. It's stuff like that makes Hank Landsberg famous and makes Henry Engineering really worth looking at. You can get all this stuff from Henry Engineering from Broadcaster's General Store. The website is bgs.cc, bgs.cc, and you can call them at 352-622-7700. They carry the stuff that you need. And you know what? They RF connectors, supplies, they can, anytime I need RF cable, whether it's smaller cable or even transmission line, I get it from Broadcaster's General Store. It's just an amazing array of broadcast equipment. Even things like lights for a TV studio. If you need to add lighting to your radio studio so you have better pictures from your cameras for your web presence, hey, no problem. They've got that too. Give them a call, 352-622-7700. Thanks a lot, BGS, Broadcaster's General Store, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack. Charles Kinney is our guest. Charles, we're going to wrap up talking about ISDN, Integrated Services Digital Network. That's what ISDN stands for. And it was great because it was a tariffed service. In other words, you paid for it. They had to deliver right. It. It had to work. It was a required thing that your phone company had to offer. So if it didn't work, you can make a phone call and say, this needs to work. And they'd typically get right on it and make it work for you, right?
That's correct. Unfortunately, it remained tariffed, but AT&T or, you know, Verizon, whoever your local carrier is, depending on what part of the country you're in, hates copper. They hate everything about copper. They don't want anything to do with copper. And ISDN was a copper service. And as the infrastructure began to fail, they didn't want to repair it. And they made it cost prohibitive to get ISDN. And the other challenge was that as they upgraded central offices or central office equipment, the newer central offices wouldn't even deal with ISDN. And if you called and tried to order an ISDN circuit, initially they would try and sell you DSL because they thought you just wanted data as opposed to 2B channels plus data, which is what broadcast would need for ISDN. And as things progressed further, you know, now they want to just sell you raw internet. Why do you want ISDN? Can't imagine why you'd want ISDN. Internet's better, yada, yada, yada. And so ISDN has become an albatross and is now effectively non-existent, unfortunately.
I guess in the U.S., ISDN had about a 20-year run where it was available in many places, and most places even. Some places it even got really cheap. Here in Tennessee, I think Bell South was trying to say, I'm sorry, to the Public Service Commission, Public Utilities Commission, and they ended up selling ISDN really cheap because they knew they wouldn't sell very much of it. So they made it really cheap. I had ISDN service in my home for $42 a month for two B channels, and it was great. And then in places like Hollywood, within, I think they call it TMZ, the 30-mile zone, you could often get ISDN for $30 and a very cheap installation fee. Some places it was still expensive to get it put in. We used it at some of my stations for a morning show done in a different city. But then it got real expensive. And I've talked to voiceover people in the last 5 years who used to pay $60, $70, $80 a month for ISDN. And now they're getting charged anywhere between $700 and $1,000 a month for ISDN. It became obvious that the telcos did not want to be in that business when they could deliver internet. Yeah.
It's unfortunate. But the world, again, the world moved on. So.
So these days we have internet, and no, it's not perfect everywhere. It's really good in a lot of places. And even I've got stations in small towns in Mississippi, and with the exception of one town, we're able to get really good internet, like a gig if we wanted to pay for it on fiber, but we pay for less than that, typically 250 or 500 megabits. And it's been just rock solid in Hawaii, my station there. Rock solid, a gig up and down. I think in 5 years it's been out one time for 6 hours, and that was during a hurricane. And then even in American Samoa, our internet has gotten a lot better. So I'm not surprised. I mean, I'm not scared about our remote broadcast moving, you know, all moving to internet, not having anything else available or not much else available. And even wireless, even 5G with products like Max Connect being 4G, but prioritized and doing things over 5G. I'll shut up now. Tell me, Charles, what have been some of your good experiences or maybe bad experiences using either wired Wi-Fi or wireless when you go out and do remotes? What are your feelings about these technologies?
So generally when we go out we in Atlanta are kind of a Comrex house, but Tyline makes an outstanding product as well. And unless we can get a hardwired circuit dropped in, then we'll use our own, the hockey pucks from AT&T or Verizon. And one of the nice things that Comrex has is they will let you bond the two so that it can, if one drops or is having issues, it will automatically switch to the other. It's kind of clunky making that happen, but it's a pretty cool feature to have. And I'm sure Tyline has something similar. I just don't have as much experience with that product. But Max Connect's a big deal. And the reason something like that is a big deal, and I've seen this over and over again, is let's say you're going to do a remote at, you know, the football stadium on Sunday. And you go out on Tuesday to test it out, and you have your AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile, you know, hockey puck, and you plug it in. You got five bars, and you connect to the station, and you talk to them, and they say, oh, yeah, we hear you great. Everything sounds good. And you go home, and you feel great. And then you come out Sunday, and there's 80,000 people, and the cellular network is now crushed. And all of a sudden, you may have five bars, but you can't connect to the network. And so that's where a product like MaxConnect is a big deal for broadcast. It gets the priority on the network, and that is a big deal. The TV folks, and I don't want to delve into the TV thing, but most of what they use now compared to the live trucks of olden days is they use, there's a couple of products. One's called TVU and one's called LiveU. And it's literally a bag with a box in it that has anywhere from 6 to 10 cellular cards in it from various carriers, and it spreads the data across all of them, which is pretty amazing. And I think as we go forward, there will probably be, to a very, very small degree, some of that in radio broadcast products, remote products.
So, on the one hand, there's internet at our studios, and I've just like you, I've been through studios that DSL is all we could get. In fact, there's one studio I still have in Indianola, Mississippi, and DSL is all we can get there in terms of a wired service, and it comes in on the top two wires of a barbed wire fence. It's really bad. I jest, but not by much. I mean, our upload speed literally is on the order of 70 kilobits per second. That's our upload speed there. Download might be a meg. And other places, we've had cable, which has been terribly inconsistent. First drop of rain, you know, it doesn't work anymore. Got to wait till the rain goes away. But at places where we've been able to get fiber, that's absolutely been fantastic so far. At my station that has the really bad DSL, I checked with T-Mobile, and Verizon may have the same thing, you know, this wireless at home using 5G, and T-Mobile looked at the map, and even though we're in the kind of the middle of nowhere, Mississippi, they said, we actually have a 5G tower right there, and the coverage is excellent. So I'm going to go take a T-Mobile 5G box and go there and give that a try. Okay, that's the studio. When you go out on remote, whether it's a stadium or, you know, a car dealer or a parade or whatever the remote might be, that's where you have a lot more variables involved. There's lots of techniques. You know, the late Chris Tobin, who used to co-host this show, he wouldn't trust the Wi-Fi in a restaurant. He'd go to their router and he would put his own little Ubiquiti hotspot there and another Ubiquiti receiver at the table he was sitting at, right? And have a pretty assured connection right there. What are some of the things that you found in the field? And I know we talked about the MaxConnect and little hockey pucks. Have you found anything else that's been challenging or like, wow, this really worked out well? Or have you been to sites? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, never, ever trust public Wi-Fi. It will bite you every single time. If you go to a restaurant, they say they've got Wi-Fi, it will burn you every single time. Because all they're going to do is put you on the guest Wi-Fi that all their customers are using, especially if you're in a situation like a sports bar or something. That's the absolute worst case scenario. And everybody's trying to stream the replay of the, you know, game and the touchdown that just happened. And meanwhile, you can't broadcast. Never, ever trust public Wi-Fi.
So what words do you like to hear? If, like, let's say you've got to go set up a remote in a couple weeks, you talk to the venue. What makes you happy? What makes you go, yeah, I have some confidence here. I'll bring my backup just in case, but I think this is going to work well. Anything they tell you that makes you feel good?
Anytime you can get a wired connection outside the firewall, you're golden. Every time you'll be golden. Not always possible, but It's every time you do a remote, whether it's a restaurant, a home show, or pick your location. If you can get a wired connection that's outside the firewall, you'll be golden every time.
Yeah. Yeah. Good to hear. Earlier this year, I went to a venue, a big hotel, a major hotel in Dallas, and I had to make a VoIP system work in support of the national, basically a shareholders meeting of a pretty big national company. And they hired me to provide telephony services for their webcast. And we told the hotel IT department what we needed. Of course, we got there and they put us basically on a wired version of their guest Wi-Fi. And it wasn't any good. So we did talk. They had the IT people there. Yeah, I know. We talked to IT people there, told them exactly what we're doing, what we needed in person, face-to-face. And they said, oh, okay, we can make that happen for you. And within 30 minutes, they came back and said, here's your IP address. Here's the gateway. Here's your subnet. Here's your DNS. Give that a try. We did. Fabulous. Worked great the whole weekend. No problem whatsoever. So I found that, you know, well, not always, but if you can go talk to the people who can actually make it happen and assure you that it is happening, that's so much better than depending on, and not putting salespeople down, but putting down somebody who just gives you the rote answer. Oh yeah, we have guest stuff. It's going to work fine. No.
Never, ever, ever trust guest Wi-Fi.
From your remotes, Charles, do you guys do any video or is it audio only from your remote sites?
It's very rare when we do video. We do on occasion, but that's much more complex and involves the digital team on multiple levels. So it's got to be a pretty big deal. We do some digital or some video rather. Recently, we did a big event called Carathon, where we raised over $1.8 million for Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. And so there was a lot of video streaming with that. But of course, Children's Healthcare was great and just provided us the connection we need. And in their case, it was a gigabit spigot. And if you can't get enough data across a gigabit spigot, then you've got bigger problems. So.
We are talking to Charles Kinney. He's the director of engineering for the Cox Media Group, the radio stations in Atlanta and other places in North Georgia. And we're talking about remote technologies. We had a blast kind of remembering about older technologies, talking more about today's technologies. Got a couple more techniques that I'm going to share with you after our last break. And I haven't warned Charles about this at all because I'm an idiot. I'm sorry. But Charles is going to have a tip for us when we come back from this commercial break. Our show is brought to you in part by something we were just talking about, and that's Josh Bone's Max Connect Wireless that will give you prioritized data. You get more important packets than anybody else. And here's Gary Morrill to tell you about it.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
And Gary's got, similar, maybe it's not the same one. This is a Cradlepoint 4G LTE modem. It'll work with others as well. What's critical is the SIM card, because you're actually getting a different APN. That's an access point in a cellular network. And you're getting, it's basically saying, hey, I'm a Max Connect customer connecting to you, Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, and give me prioritized data. And it does. So check that out. Max Connect Wireless. They got a website and everything, so you can check it out for yourself. Hey, and you know, you can even try this out and make sure it's going to work for you. Choose the carrier that you believe will cover the areas you know that you need. And in fact, this one, this modem right here has two SIM cards in it. So if I'm not getting a great signal on, say, Verizon, I can switch over to AT&T and see if the signal's better. So check that out. Works great for transmitter sites, but also for live remote broadcasts. Thanks a lot, Max Connect Wireless and Josh Bone. Hey, I also want to tell you about Angry Audio. They got that cute logo there, the guy with all the hair and the goatee, and He looks like he might be angry. This is the headphone gizmo. We were just talking about this today. I was actually on a more or less a sales consulting call with Telos Alliance, talking to a radio station up in the Northeast that's going to be putting in some Axia consoles, and they wanted to know about headphones. So we have both me, Jim Armstrong, and I both had these headphone gizmos. These are just terrific. They got mounting holes right here. You can screw those up to the bottom of your countertop. There's little rubber pads built in here already so that this thing won't rock. You can also just lay it on your console if you want to. Yes, the logo there is upside down, but other than that, it's fine. You can power it with a wall wart right here. And when you power one of them, you can power two more just by daisy chaining these together with the Studio Hub standard. So that is just an awesome system. Plenty loud. It's got both kinds of headphone connectors, the quarter inch or the 3.5 millimeter headphone connector. And of course, at Angry Audio, they did a really smart thing. They bought Studio Hub. You heard there was a rumor a few years ago that Studio Hub was closing their doors, and they did, Angry Audio snapped it right up, kept the production going. They have fantastic production techniques for making adapters like this work well. This one is a female XLR into an RJ45 of the Studio Hub wiring standard. And this works great for analog stereo audio or AES-EBU audio. Works just terrific. And with that experience in mind, you know, Angry Audio has come out with things like the headphone disconnector. So here's a headphone disconnector. You get a female and a male quarter inch tip ring sleeve. But look at this. It's kind of like a MagSafe type connector there in the middle. So if you get up and walk away with your headphones on, you don't break your connector off inside your headphone jack. I just had to repair one of those about a month ago. So check that out from Angry Audio. Really amazing stuff. Good stuff. Thank you, Angry Audio, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. It's angryaudio.com. Okay. What was I going to talk about? Charles, do you remember what I said I was going to talk about before we left for commercial? Let me get a tip from you. And Chris Tarr. I talked to Chris Tarr earlier. And said, okay, what should I talk to ask Charles about? I said, Chris, what are you doing for remotes yourself these days? He says, well, most of our remotes, we send out a small mixer like a Mackie mixer, something small, inexpensive. If they tear it up, I'm not too worried about it. We'll buy another one. And we get the kind that has the USB audio codec or sound card, if you will. Run that to a laptop. He says, we got cheap laptops. Doesn't have to be a great one. And he said, we use the CleanFeed program. So that's a browser-based service, uses WebRTC to encode your audio and send it as low latency as possible to the radio station and send the return audio back. CleanFeed, or he says, we're also using, and very happy with it, the Lucy Live. And that's some software can go on your phone. There's a Lucy Live app for your phone. You can put it on your laptop. And back at the studio, if we're using Lucy, there's a Lucy Studio app that we run on a PC there. We use the Axia IP audio driver to then take that audio into and out of the computer and introduce that into our Axia network, and we send the mix minus back the same way. So he says that's how we're doing the vast majority of our remotes, using Lucy Live and some clean feed as well. With off the shelf laptops and cheap mixers. How about you? Have you got a tip for us that you might leave us with, Charles?
So we're big fans of CleanFeed. CleanFeed, frankly, with our clients, got us through COVID, because what we would do with the bigger clients is we would get not a super nice USB mic, but I don't know. I think we were paying $65-$70 or whatever. Or a USB mic, and we'd send out a set of headphones to the client, and they could plug that into their computer. And then with CleanFeed, we could just send them a link, and they could produce their spots while they were talking to our production person. Of course, the ultimate social distancing is digital, and it worked really, really well. And we were able to keep a lot of clients on air with current stuff that like to do their own spots by doing that. So we're big fans of CleanFeed.
Seems like we had the guy who owns Clean Feed as a guest here years ago, actually. Seems like they have a free version and then a paid version. And you guys are probably using the paid version to get all the benefits, right?
We are. We pay a whopping $37 a month. It breaks the bank every time.
It's affordable, but that's working well for you, huh?
Yeah, no, we're big fans, but of course, with Comrex and Tele, cool apps as well for your phone, so that you can do G.722 audio across your phone using SIP to either talk to an access unit or back to your Tele system if you're doing a VX. We have both, and it works really well, and that's something that people don't necessarily think about when they're buying this technology, but it's a big deal, and it's very, very flexible.
That you bring up a good point. I'll make a quick addition to that. So what Charles is mentioning is one of the phone standards that now is pretty ubiquitous is G.722. We used to think of that as a codec in broadcast gear that worked at like 64 kilobits. That's still what it is, but G722 at least gives you a 7.5 kilohertz audio feed. So the audio can be pretty good. It's not, not concert quality, but it's great for voice. And you can get apps for your phone like Bria or Linphone that the app may be a paid for app, 10, 12 buck app, but it does G722. And then you just call your Telos VX phone system and it accepts that as a G722 call. And so you can put a remote on the air. And I know stations that do whole high school football games this way using G722. And the quality is really good. It's way better than the phone line. And but it's not 15 kilohertz. It's 7.5 kilohertz. So thanks for bringing that up, Charles. Charles, I know you got to go. I got to go. We got to go. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been great to catch up for an hour and 15 minutes with you. I appreciate it.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I want to see you again. I guess I'll see you at the next 100th anniversary of the WSB station, because that's the last time I saw you was at that.
I'll bring the beard back for that.
we'll have some wine that's really old by then, all right?
Like us.
hey, don't laugh. Technology could keep us alive for another 100 years. I mean, they could, maybe. I don't know that I want to be around. All right, Charles Kinney's the director of engineering for Cox Media Group, the radio stations in Atlanta and North Georgia. So, Charles, thanks for being with us and look forward to catching up with you again. Big thanks to Suncast for producing today's show. Thank you for being there, buddy. I really appreciate you. And Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. It's been a delight. Hey, next week, Curtis Maychek is our guest here on the show. He's been on before, and he's going to have some cool stuff to talk about. So we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.